Welcome, everyone. Happy Father's Day. If you don't know me, my name's Phil Close, and I'm one of the guys that have been tasked with the little mission we have with David on a sabbatical. So if you don't know what sabbatical is, what that is that's a proactive way the church cares for our leaders. And so we're so blessed with David, not only with David, but with his family, with his parents, with his in-laws, and as a church, we take that time to allow him to be away and to be able to focus on his family. He's been given some homework from the elders that he's going to complete. And so I would really encourage you to be in prayer for him in the next three months. That as he's away, he's able to focus on his quality time with his family. He's able to complete the tasks that have been assigned to him from our elders, and he's able to come back refreshed and ready to lead. So the worst part of that is that those who know mine and David's relationship, how hard it was to say that. So, but yeah, so like I said, we're starting something new. Over the last, I don't know, the guys here, we've been meeting for several months, and somebody said forever. So I just wanted to give you a brief backstory as to what's led to this. So around the time sabbatical was announced, David and Tyler got a group of us together, and we kind of laid out the mission work of, hey, you know, David's going to be gone for 12 weeks, and there's 12 of us here that we decided, hey, we're going to do a sermon together, and David wanted to make sure nobody had fun doing it, so we're doing the book of Ecclesiastes. So thank him for that. It was very convenient that he's like, hey, we're going to do this, but I'm not going to be here. I'm like, thanks, David. And so, yeah, we kind of had this process where we wanted to make sure that in the next 12 weeks that the sermons are done right, that the guys that are going to stand up here are preaching from the Bible, that we are leading our church, and that we are pushing ourselves to glorify God from our sermons. And so we kind of had this process where we've met probably for about the last 8 months. We would meet downstairs, and we'd kind of just go over, hey, what is preaching? What does it mean to preach? And that turned into, what does it look like to preach? And so on week one, we decided to save the best for last, and naturally, I was picked to go first. So, but we kind of just grew together. It's been such a blessing to see the group of men that have come together for this. And so it got to the point, once we had our text assigned, and once we kind of knew the order of it, we would come up here, and as a group, we would be preaching a 10-minute snippet. And to be here and asking the hard questions to our guys and saying, hey, this is where I'm struggling with. How do I make this text relevant? And being able to ask those questions and having guys like John Carrick and Mike Lutz being here to be those people has been such a blessing. And so after we did that, we moved on to doing more of our sermons. And so we broke up into quarters of this sermon series, and we got together and preached the majority of our sermons. And so it was a really fun night on Wednesday night after praise team practice to have four guys preach their sermons. And so I feel bad for Scott Dunkel, who went last, because we were all tired at about 10 o'clock trying to give him advice. So, but one last thing before I start is I want to talk to those who call Blessed Hope home, that for the next 12 weeks, we're going to be doing this. The sermon series is going to be a very in-depth verse-by-verse study that's going to be going through the book of Ecclesiastes. And it's easy. It's easy that David's not here to maybe have other priorities. We have good weather. I mean, the biggest selling point I have for you is this is probably going to be the shortest 12 sermons you're going to hear all year. So I would probably come now and then save your time away in 12 weeks. But no, I would just encourage you to really be supporting us. Like I said, there's 12 of us that are going to be preaching. You know, you're not going to know everybody. We're going to have 12 different preaching styles. We're going to have different ways we're going to preach. And so I would encourage you to use that time. If you don't know the guy who's up here, talk to us. Go over our text. Be in prayer. Words of wisdom. We are so blessed with the church we have to be able to grow together. And so this is just another one of those things that we've come together as a small group of men, and we're going to lead our church in David's time away. So I'm really excited about it, and I'm ready to see that. So like I said, we're going to be in Ecclesiastes. So if you guys want to make your way there, I'll be in chapter 1, and we're going to be doing the first 11 verses. So a little fun fact about Ecclesiastes is that it's not known who wrote it. Some will tell you it was Solomon. Some people are going to tell you it was somebody else. And so even in our group of men, some people were saying one way, some way are saying the other. So I kind of compare it to, there was a time I heard a pastor from this stage talked about open hand and a closed hand theology. And so in our open hand, I would say we have something like this. I don't know who wrote the book. You're going to see people saying it was Solomon. Some people are going to refer to him as the author, as the teacher, as the preacher. And so, you know, you're just going to see that. But in our closed hand, theology is the things that we hold as a cornerstone to our faith. And so I think this is one of those open hand things that we could talk about it all night at our group, and we would probably just end up arguing over who wrote some books in the Bible, some words. So, but anyway, so we're going to say, we're going to be in Ecclesiastes 1, and we're going to be doing the first 11 verses. So, here we go. These are the words of the teacher, King David's son, who ruled in Jerusalem. Everything is meaningless, says the teacher, completely meaningless. What do people get for all their hard work under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth never changes. The sun rises and the sun sets, then hurries around to rise again. The wind blows north, the wind blows south, and then turns north. Around and around it goes, blowing in circles. Rivers run into the sea, but the sea is never full. Then the water returns again to the rivers and flows out again to the sea. Everything is wearisome beyond description. No matter how much we have, no matter how much we see, we are never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we are never content. History merely repeats itself. It has all been done before. Nothing under the sun is truly new. Sometimes people say, hey, here is something new, but actually it is old. Nothing is ever truly new. We don't remember what happened in the past. And in the future generations, no one will remember what we are doing now. So, let's see, a very, very happy text to read. So, thank you, David. When we started, this was something that when I got the text and I kind of was going over what I was reading, this is the header I have to work with, is everything is meaningless. And so the first thing I like doing when I'm doing sermon prep or I'm talking about stuff, I like to understand more about what words mean. And I mean, meaningless is probably a word the majority of us know what it means. But when I ask Google, here are some other words meaningless means: foolish, silly, senseless, incoherent, and absurd. So those are all things that I think show us the same trend. They show us something that's not important, something that we should not be concerning with affecting our lives, especially for eternity. And so there's a few things as we go through our sermon today. I want to challenge you with some questions. I want you to reflect on some things. And I want to kind of go over what these 11 verses mean in my life. And so there were a couple of things that stuck out to me as we went over this about what did those 11 verses say. And there was a theme I had that when I started reading these verses, that how are we applying this in our lives? And so the first kind of thought I had was chasing satisfaction. That we see in these verses that we are taught that enough is never enough. And it's so crazy to me how relevant our Bible is all these years later. And that this teacher is asking us or telling us that No matter what we do, no matter what we see, no matter what we hear, we want more. We want bigger. We want better. And so one of the first questions I have for you is, when's the last time you can say you were satisfied? You know, if you're a sports fan, your team won a championship. In politics, your political party had control. You know, we're in the world of social media, so did you have the best social media feed ever and all this? And these are not bad things. These are not things that are drawing us away from God. You know, these are things that are a part of our lives, or those people, everybody in work who's gotten a big promotion lately, who's gotten a big pay raise, that these are not things that are going to eat at us, but they're things that if we let control our lives, we're going to put above God. And like I said, we are taught that everything, there's always more to it. There's something newer as soon as you buy a car. There's something better as soon as you buy a tablet or a phone. You know, that we teach ourselves this, but we see in verse 7 here that the rivers run into the sea, but the sea is never full. And it's so easy for us to act like the sea, where we get something or we see something and we have to have it and we need it. And like I said, there are plenty of things that are not bad things, but we have trained ourselves. It's Father's Day. We've trained our kids probably without even realizing it that enough is never enough. We think that if we get one more social media friend, one more promotion, one more digit in our paycheck, our life is going to be full. And so then later we see in verse 8, no matter how much we see, we're never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we're never content. And that's such a reality check for me that somebody so long ago realized those same burdens that affect us today. Like I said, so many of these things are not bad things. You can have a good job that you're successful at. You can have a good social media life, or you can have a good friend group that's all great, but when you are chasing things of the world and putting Jesus behind it, that's when our reality is going to be different. So here's one of the first questions I have for us today, is that I want you guys to kind of reflect on this, to think about the life you have, the things you do every day, and that is, what's your meaningless? What is that thing you do, that hobby or that whatever you want to fill in the blank with? What is that thing that is so important to your life, but you do it at the cost of putting your faith below it? And so that's kind of what I've taken from talking about our meaningless, and that I really want us to see today how important it is that we are putting Jesus first. So, and honestly, in doing this sermon prep, one of the things that kind of stuck out to me, and something I'm not very good at, and I'm actually really good at making it meaningless, is our faith in action. For those who don't know, our faith in action is a 3-day mission trip we do every year, and this is year 10. And so for me, when I'm assigned a task, I go right to, okay, we need to physically do this thing. We need to paint this house. We need to roof this roof. We need to whatever we have in front of us, that needs to be done, and that's fine. But what it made me realize is how unimportant the work is. That kind of the thought I had was, what good does it do for us to get to eternity? And God asked, what did you do to show my name? And you say, yeah, we did this faith in action. We did it for X amount of years, and every house in Vinton is taken care of. Every house is painted. Every house doesn't have a leaky roof. Every yard looks great. And Jesus says, hey, how many people did you show me to? And you say, well, not very many. You know, we were too busy doing those things. And so I really have kind of got a gut punch of how important it is that in doing something like our faith in action, or John talked about other mission work we have, that it's so important that through what we're doing, that we are drawing people to Jesus, and that we use our time as faith in action, that the work comes secondary to making relationships with the homeowners, you know, kind of getting a story from them as to what's happened in their life to, you know, if there have been a series of unfortunate events that have led to them being in that, or there's a health scare, that there's something that's happened that doesn't allow them to do those things. And then we are so blessed in our church, the amount of men and women that step up every year and are able to make those relationships, are able to do so many complex things that really relieve a burden on people. And at the same time, we have people like Pam, who just doesn't know a stranger. And she gets a crew together. So, like, for this year, I was tasked with a really small project, and one that was very minimal, time-consuming. But I was like, man, these people, I don't know where they're at with Jesus. But getting what Haley and Christy called our facility coordinators, these are the people that, on top of the people that come to your house, there's somebody else who's going to pop in later and say, hey, let's just sit down and talk. And so I knew that this guy was kind of someone like, just, it's going to take a special kind of person to connect with them and, again, kind of get to know them. And so it was a prayer answered when we were there working, and I saw the guy who came in as this facility coordinator. I'm like, man, we could not have had a better person that was going to meet and talk to this guy. And so right away, there was a connection there. Right away, it's like, hey, let's talk about Jesus. And so I think that faith in action is something that we have the ability to make so meaningful. But like I said, I'm so, so bad at doing that at times. And so I would encourage you that whenever we're doing stuff, that we are able to focus on Jesus first. So, and we just don't watch a video on kids. I mean, it's Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to those around us. And another thing in my sermon prep was talking about how important it is for dads to be leading our families, to be showing our kids Jesus first. And so it's fun to see those videos and, you know, to kind of see what the kids are saying, to kind of get their true sides of who their dad is. And it's so easy to mislead our children. It's so easy that the life I live for my two daughters is one that when they see it, do they see me living out Jesus first? And so, I mean, our kids aren't stupid. They see every side of you. They see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And, you know, I'm sure we're all good at putting on a show. We can come here, we can go places, and, you know, our kids know how to behave. But at home, behind closed doors, what kind of life are you living for your kids? Are you living a life that shows them Jesus? Or are you living a life that shows them you serve the world first? And so, like I said, it's Father's Day. I don't want to take away from that. But as a father, what good does it do for us to show our kids all these worldly things and at the same time show them that our faith is not a high priority? So I would really encourage you that kind of take that reflectively and be able to think, like, every day, every time I have with my children, am I doing something that shows them Jesus? Is the way I react to something showing them Jesus? Is the way we interact with friends and family showing them Jesus? Is the way we coach them in things showing them Jesus? So I'm going to encourage you with this to kind of be leaving no doubt that whatever happens, whatever you're doing, that you are leading a life that shows your kids Jesus first. So, and I mean, like I said, parenting, it's not easy. It's so difficult. We have our kids that they start out small and they're nice because they can't talk. And then the talking starts and it hasn't stopped yet. So, and we make sacrifices. I can't imagine I'm the only parent here who says you've made sacrifices for your kids. And when you're making your sacrifices, what are you sacrificing for? Are you sacrificing for a better sports season? Are you sacrificing for an easier school, a year of school? You know, are you sacrificing so that your kids know that, hey, above everything else, we serve Jesus? One of the verses I kind of had when we were talking about this came out of Mark, that It was something that it's so easy for us to chase the world. It's so easy for us to be living a life that shows those around us that, hey, you know, it's nice having the newer things. It's nice having a nicer car, a newer house, things that are better. And that's, like I said, it's not a bad thing. But when we get that into our heads, we get that into our kids' heads. Like I said, in Mark, in 8:36, we see this. We see Jesus say, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet forfeit their soul? I'm not trying to guilt trip anybody that we need to sell everything and go back to the basics. But especially for dads. For dads, we're leaders in our homes. And I'm wanting us to see how, more than anything, it is so important that we are living out a life that shows our wives, shows our kids, that we are putting Jesus first. And today could be a hard day. You know, Tyler kind of alluded to it earlier in his prayer, but maybe your kid, dad, you're here today is the first or many Father's Day without your dad's here. Harder, maybe you're that parent here who's spent several or one Father's Day without your kid here. And so we have that, or kind of like me, you could be somebody who doesn't really have a relationship with your dad, and so having a day dedicated to him doesn't really make a lot of sense. So I would encourage you to enjoy the day as a dad, to spend time with your family, but to also be realizing how important everything you do is that our kids, they're watching everything. They're seeing everything we do. And are we showing them Jesus or are we not? Kind of in this section we're in talking about kids, I kind of think of this Bible verse from Proverbs that tells us to train up a child in the way he should go, so when he is old, he will not depart from it. And we have such an important job in raising up our kids. And what's fun about our church here is that as a youth group leader, I get to see our high schoolers. We have youth group from 5th through 12th grade, and I get to be one of the people that help with our high schoolers. And so it's kind of a little more of a challenge for me to hear those words that we are so blessed with your kids and grandkids that come to our group. We are so blessed with the questions they ask. The ways they're showing their faith, I mean, I've said this a couple times, that if we lived out the faith that I saw from our 5th through 12th graders, we would probably be at 4 services. You know, our kids are, they're so good about inviting friends, about sharing the words of Jesus, and it's such a challenge at the same time to be in that leader role, that am I living out Jesus for these kids to see? When these kids come and see these 4, 6, 8 leaders, you know, those lives we're living outside of Sunday nights or Wednesday nights for the younger kids, are we living out Jesus for them to see? And so I really kind of reflected on that in all this time, and it's such a blessing to see all of our kids grow and kind of to the point we're at with them. And so we're very, very blessed. And I also got to thinking about the history of our church. We're in 20 years of Blessed Hope being a thing here. And watching our church grow has been such an incredible thing. I was reflecting on some of the things we've had happen in the last couple months. And some time ago, we had baby dedication. We had 6 families that stood up here with their little ones and said, hey, we are dedicating our children's lives to Jesus. We're also dedicating that we are asking this church to help us raise our kids. That was what the parents took from it. And then as a church body, if you were here, we stood up and said, hey, we are going to come alongside you. We're going to shepherd your little ones the best way we can. And so being that parent on a stage in the past, and I see many of you who've also been there, it's such an incredible blessing the way our church family has come alongside us and shepherded us as we raise our kids, as we've grown as husbands and wives. And so I think that we don't think about how important our roles are with our children. We maybe brush it aside, or we think that, hey, after this season, we can really start on our faith. We can really buckle down after school's over. And that's not it. It doesn't do you any good to show your kid from a young age that this is more important than Jesus, whatever it is. And so being able to kind of show them that, hey, Jesus is first. Jesus is your cornerstone, and everything else that you're going to do is going to be built around that. So, and then kind of one of the next stepping stones we have, you know, we had a couple weeks after that, we had our high school graduates. We had five young men and women that stood up here, and maybe they've lived a life that mom and dad were in church every week. Maybe they lived a life where mom and dad didn't come to church. And so it was so incredible to see that, where as that youth group leader, I've gotten behind the scenes of all the struggles our kids have had and being able to come alongside them and be that ear to listen, to have those hard conversations with these kids has been one that, and when we kind of talk as leaders after our groups and stuff, and just hearing all that's going on, whether they shared it or not, we would have many times where our kids would say, hey, this is what's affecting me. And the blessing was, as we always, kind of like any Sunday school, any ministry, we have, hey, here's our assignment for the night, here's our text for the night. And we would get derailed because kids are talking about things that are affecting them in life. And it's so incredible that these kids feel safe to talk to us. And so I was like, hey, we kind of throw our lesson out the window for the night, and we've had so many good conversations. And so seeing this verse that tells us to train up a child, and it's so incredible to be somebody who's seen a lot of our upperclassmen, our juniors and our seniors, kind of shepherding our newer kids to the group, our younger ones, and being those leaders. But, and yeah, so maybe you're here and you think a Father's Day message doesn't apply to you. Your kids have moved out, you're a single mom, and maybe you're somebody who doesn't have kids. That doesn't change the way we should be focusing on our faith and focusing on the faith of the future of our church. So, like I said, maybe you're that single mom who's battling two battles and two roles instead of one. Maybe you're the person whose kids have moved out and you don't physically have any kids in your house, but that doesn't change. You know, if I think I've heard a couple people talk about it, how it's once you're done parenting, if you do a good job, you get a if you raise your kids right, you get to spoil your grandkids. And if you spoil your kids, you get to raise your grandkids. And so that's just something where it's hard to do. But yeah, so back to our text, we kind of seen that in Ecclesiastes. I'm really excited to kind of hear how everybody else spins their text, because like I said, we were all so excited for all of our very enthusiastic, optimistic sermon series. I hear Mike laughing because he picked up on my sarcasm. But we're in a world where self-centering is so common that we want to take whatever is happening and we want it to be about us. We want our lives or our goals to be the center of attention. And like I said, it's not done intentionally. We aren't doing this out of wanting to be the center of attention, but we are just taught from a world that it's all about us. It's all about growth. It's all about being bigger and better. And as we chase our meaningless, we might think that it's the most meaningful thing we have or the most meaningful thing we need in our lives. But without Jesus, it's worthless. So, and this is a verse that I've always have found a way to put into my sermon. It's probably my favorite Bible verse. And so I was like, well, we're talking about this, we might as well bring that in. In Philippians 1:21, we see, for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And I love this verse because it's so simple, but at the same time, it tells us what we need to be focusing on. We need to be focusing on a life dedicated to Christ first, and everything else is going to fall into place. And obviously, like I said, to live is Christ. And then after that, death and eternal life in heaven is the only gain we have from living in Christ. And so this verse, it tells me that whatever is going on, whatever challenges I'm facing, does it change eternity? And do I need to focus and realign my life to be living Christ-centered, or are we realigning our lives to be worldly-centered? And so with that, I want to ask you one more question. Something that we talked about, the meaningless, and now this is kind of a fill-in-the-blank question, which is, to live is blank. What is your to live? When you say, hey, this is the thing I have, what is that thing that you always have time for? The thing that whatever is coming up, whatever is going on, you're going to make time for, even at the cost of other things in life. For me, one of the things I think a lot of us can relate to is a time we were sitting around a work meeting, and we were kind of listening to all the bigwigs talk about profit and how all the money was being made ever, and we're going to all be Elon Musk rich, I think, in a couple of years. But one of the guys asked, he's like, hey, what do you want? And so I remember I genuinely was having this question. I had my head down. I'm like, eternal life, you know, like just having that, being in the presence of God forever is something that is the most important thing. And I kind of chuckled when reality check came back and he goes, money. And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. You know, money causes nothing but happiness. It fixes every problem. We never have any stress. And so I just chuckled when I'm like, yeah, we think that we're trained that that is the answer, that whatever you have going on, money's going to be a fix to that. And so in Matthew 6, I kind of thought about this verse talking about money. It says, don't store up treasures here on earth, where moths eat and rust destroys them, and where thieves break in and steal. Store your treasures in heaven, where moths and rust cannot destroy, and thieves do not break in and steal. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. And so when we see treasure, it doesn't have to be a financial thing. We've made treasures out of so many things. And I would really encourage you to think on your life, think of those treasures you have. And are those treasures that are meant to draw you and your family closer to Jesus? Or are they worldly treasures that are going to rust and be destroyed over time? So another story I have kind of thinking about this is, this came from a friend of mine. We were having a conversation one day and he told me this. I'm like, man, that's the best sermon illustration I've ever heard of. And we were not talking about Jesus and we were not talking about this, but this friend of mine, he sent me a check, a picture of a check that when I looked at it, it was an inheritance check he got from a deceased family member. And it was a check that when I saw the amount would wipe out any debt in my life. It would leave me with no problems for anything financially for a very long time. And so I asked my buddy, I said, hey, you know, what's your plan? You're a single guy, you don't have any kids, you know, what are you going to do? And these three words, when he said it, I was like, man, that's quite the reality check. His response was, this changes nothing. And I'm like, man, if we as Christians live that out, that whatever good we have, whatever gifts we're given, if we were living out a life that this doesn't change anything with my faith, would allow us to live a life so much more centered on Christ. And so my buddy, when I'm talking to him, and he tells me that the only debt he has is an ambulance ride after a suicide attempt, you know, a several $100,000 check is pretty irrelevant to life. And so I would imagine he would trade that check 100 times to not have a life plagued with mental illnesses. And so, And so I think that we live in a world where life is telling us to chase this, to go after this, to make this the center of your attention. And in John 14:6, here's what Jesus tells us to do. Jesus told them, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me. We are nothing without Jesus. We think we can add Jesus to our lives as an add-on to the other things we have in our life, when in reality, Jesus demands the best of us. And we cannot serve the world and Jesus at the same time. So, are you here today and you think something's happened in your life that's drawing you away from Jesus. You think that there's something you've done that is going to take you out of the love Jesus has for you. And that is something that the devil wants you to think, that the thing that's happened is unforgivable. The sin you've done is too much. That whatever is going on, Jesus will never forgive you of. And we have so many different struggles, whether they could be physical, mental, spiritual, financial. These things, they can plague us. And they have us thinking that we are away from Jesus. So I would encourage you that whether you've been here for years, maybe you're here for the first time this year, maybe the first time ever, that Jesus is waiting for you. Jesus is waiting for you to come to him and to be living a life focused on Jesus. And so as we kind of start to wind down here, I want to ask you, where are you turning? What is that thing you are turning to when life is rough? You know, maybe you're a workaholic, that when you're stressed, more hours at work maybe will mean a bigger paycheck. You know, maybe it's just your way of getting away from a hectic lifestyle at home or other things that you dive into to work. Maybe it's those habits we have. Maybe you work out or you have this thing that you do to kind of draw your attention away from things. And those are all good. But are you here today and you have that intentional sin? That thing that you are only doing to numb the challenges of life? That you are thinking, if I do this, I'm going to feel this way. I'm going to not be focused on the problems I have. And so I would encourage you. Encourage to think about, where are you turning? And at what point in your life are you turning to Jesus? Is Jesus the first thing you turn to? Or is Jesus forgotten about and never turned to? And so, like I said, we've talked a little bit about how easy it is to be broken and to be thinking that Jesus is outside of our reach. And that we've done something to lose the love of Jesus, who loves us more than anything. And so, can I give you some encouragement here from Matthew 11:28? Jesus tells us, come to me all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. So, the one thing I want you to see from this is, who does Jesus tell that to? He says, come to me all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. He doesn't leave that open to a restriction of who can come to Jesus. It's not to a political class. It's not to a social class. It's not to a financial class. Jesus is open to the best Christian you know and the worst sinner you know. That we've taken this to think, well, I've done this. Jesus wouldn't forgive me of this. Or I don't trust Jesus enough that he can make this better. And so that's why I just want to tell you that whatever has you tired in life, whatever meaningless you've been chasing, whatever things you've been doing that you've noticed are drawing you away from Jesus, he's waiting for you. And like I said, maybe you're here and you don't know who this Jesus guy is I'm talking about. Come up and ask. Let's talk about it. Maybe a friend brought you. Talk to them. Or there are so many people who are ready and willing to talk to you about Jesus. And it's fun going back to our youth group days, thinking of, we've done so good, I think, at teaching our kids they're not alone. So we'd break up into our young men, and our young women would kind of break off into their own groups, and we would challenge the men to kind of do some challenges of, hey, are you checking in with others? Get a couple guys' numbers you might not have. Shoot them a text throughout the week. How can I pray for you? What do you have going on? And it's been such a blessing for these kids to see they're not alone. That if whatever struggles they're having, you know, when one kid would talk about something and somebody else would piggyback off of that, it kind of reminded me last week when David was talking about how he was in a setting where he addressed sin he had in his life only to have somebody else come forward and say, hey, I'm struggling with that same thing. And it's that same blessing I think we have with our youth group kids, where they've kind of been in that same role where a kid will be like, man, this is a struggle I'm having. And maybe they're the younger kid in the group or the not as well-known kid in the group. And then all of a sudden, one of our seniors, one of our leaders, like, hey, that's the same for me. And so it's been such an eye-opener thing for me to see that our kids, they're not dumb. That as we grow and as we're leading them, that we can be showing them Jesus first. So, and this isn't just for you high schoolers or you kids here. This is for all of us, that you can try to do it alone. But when you have a community that has your back, your growth is going to outweigh anything Satan can try to convince you of. And as adults, we need to realize how important a role we have in shaping the future of our church. Whether you help with children's ministry in some aspect or not, whether you're a parent here who's new to our church, whether you're new to faith, we have such an important role. And so we're going to kind of wind down here, and I want to finish it out with this. I want you to encourage you to make it meaningful. Turn your meaningless into meaningful. In Philippians 2, Paul writes, don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interest, but take an interest in others. You must have the same attitude that Christ had. And when I think about our church family, I think about all the influence we have outside of this building. We have people involved in school. We have people involved in maybe boards, or you have found yourself in a position where people are looking to you for influence. And people are watching you. Whatever you do, whatever job you work, you have people looking to you for everything. And so when you're living a life that shows I'm dedicated to Jesus first, they're going to notice that. They're going to notice there's something different about the way you talk to people. There's something different about the way you handle conflict. So I just want to end us with this, that without Jesus in our lives, it's all meaningless. If you live a life that focuses on the world, you are going to be wondering why your faith hasn't grown. But when we put Jesus at the center of attention, that whatever we are focusing on is Jesus first and the world second, your life is going to build around that. And so I would encourage you, we're going to have the praise team come forward. I want to close out with our song we're going to sing here shortly. That this is a song, when I heard it, I thought that this is a song perfect for us to end our time with. And that song is Heart of Worship. Some of the lyrics we have tell us, I'm sorry, Lord, for the thing I've made it. When it's all about you, it's all about you, Jesus. So when we are singing, what is that thing that you've made more than Jesus? What is that thing that you've put on a pedestal above Jesus? And that thing that is probably making your faith harder to grow? And so I would encourage you to be finding those meaningless things in your lives, to be turning them to make them meaningful, and to be living a life dedicated to Christ in all you do. So if you're here and you don't know who Jesus is, come up. We have people that are going to be up here after each service that are ready and wanting to pray for you. We've made it such a taboo thing that if someone's coming up here to pray, there's something bad going on. And when in reality, this prayer team that's here, they want to know how to be praying for you. They're probably praying for you anyway, so you might as well come up and say, hey, this is what I want prayer for. And so, like I said, we're going to sing this song here. As the praise team come forward and to sing, I'm going to close in prayer and then we'll go on. Dear Lord, we want to thank you so much for everything that you've given us, that as we find meaningless things in our lives that draw our attention away from you, that we can focus on you, that we can be living a life that is centered around Jesus first and the world second, and that no matter what comes our way, we're focused on you, and that you will take us in our time outside of this service, that in our everyday lives we can be living out a world that shows the world you, that in every interaction, every friendship we have, we can be focusing on Jesus first and the world second. And be with us as we go. Amen.